Hello everyone. Thanks very much for listening to another episode of the Player Development First podcast. This is episode 9 with Stuart Hart. Stuart and myself met back in 2015 when we were both working for UK Elite Soccer in New York. We both went their separate ways, and Stuart is now working out in Northern California in the Oakland area, where he's working with 24/7 soccer, and he's in within a club. Stuart has been a director of coaching, and coached within multiple clubs in the US, and he also had a playing career back in England, where he played pro for Bristol Rovers, amongst other teams throughout the Football League. Stuart's a great guy. He speaks well about the game, and he was interested in talking about parent education, so we discussed that a little bit too. Thanks very much, guys, for listening to another episode. Stuart, thanks very much for coming on the podcast today, mate.
No problem, Greg. Good to catch up, mate. It's been a long time.
It has, mate. Yeah, me and Stuart, we both got to know each other in 2015, working for UK Elite Soccer, and obviously we both went their different ways. And Stuart, you're now over in the West Coast. But I just, with all my guests coming on, mate, I just like to go back to the start with them. So, what was your background growing up, Stuart? Where did you grow up?
Yeah, I grew up in a place called Basingstoke, which is south of London, near Reading. Grew up there, sort of suburbs. And I suppose the way I got into soccer was, or sorry, football,
mm-hmm. as we yeah.
as I got into, I was probably around about 8 years old, playing in a little tournament with my local team. And then I got scouted by a Portsmouth, I'd say, School of Excellence soccer coach, like a little scout. So he just went over to my dad, said, look, we'd like to have a look at him, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, everything was very different back then. I started attending that a couple of times a week locally. Really, really, really good coach, Kevin Leahy, a lovely guy. And
so would you play with your own club back then, Stuart? Would you play like with your local club and then you would go to their centre of excellence in Portsmouth?
Yeah. Great. Yeah, that's okay, great. So we're able to do in it the both, you know. Yeah. So I'd do it on the days that I wasn't obviously either practicing or playing with my local team. So that was my first little foot in the door at that, you know, sort of academy level, I suppose. And then just went through that.
So where did you go from there, mate? Did you end up playing? Did you end up going through Portsmouth's academy, or who? What club did you play for?
Well, I did a couple of years there. Didn't work out. Then I think I moved to Brighton and Hove Albion.
Yes.
So I went over to there. Joined, signed as a, they did in schoolboy forms back then. So that took me up to my the age just before YT. So I was probably around about up to, I'd say 15 years old. And then they make the decision if they're going to take you on as a youth training scheme, YTS scheme, which is just 2 years. Yeah. And then they decide then whether they take you on pro or not. So you basically train every day like a pro, but, you know, aspiring to be a pro. Where they teach you all the basic fundamentals, and then the big day comes whether they say yes or no.
Yeah. What position did you play back then, Stuart?
Initially, when I was at Brighton, I was probably like a right midfield. But then I got told I was too small for what they wanted. I had that a lot, actually. So I left there, went on trial to Coventry City. Was there for a while as well, got told the same. And then my dad took me to Bristol Rovers, lined up a trial. There's loads of kids there this day. It was just, you know, I must have done well enough to get noticed, and they asked me back again for another game, and actually played me as a right back and a left back in those games. He came out, called about four or five of us in, and said that we were willing to offer you a YTS scholarship, which lasts for 2 years. And we took it.
So you got your YTS with
Bristol.
Bristol, brilliant, fantastic. And did you get kept on then as a pro at that club?
Yeah, so I'd done my 2 year, obviously, and it was about 3 hours away from home, which was great for me because I had no distractions. So I could literally just immerse myself in it, you know. It was hard because I left home when I was 16 years of age, nearly 17. But then that's my journey, start of my journey on my own, you know. Learned a lot from it, discipline and living in a house with eight other lads my age, you know, you start to
Sure, that
figure
was
out.
fun.
Yeah, right. I feel sorry for the people looking after us in the house, I tell you.
Yeah.
They had a hard, tough job. But it taught you a lot, you know. Yeah, it was good. Good experience.
How was your experience on the living in digs and training every day? Was that was I'm sure back then at those times, sorry, I'm not making you sound old, mate, but I'm sure it was a lot different what it is now.
A lot different from what I hear from now at pro clubs. My little nephew's at Norwich City at the moment in academy, completely different. We were all given jobs around the ground. So we would train alongside the pros. So it was like a carrot daily. You know, you could see the pros and you're watching them, you're aspiring to be them. And then they put you on jobs around the ground. So, you know, a couple of you might be on balls and bibs where you have to set out the apparatus, the field sizes and stuff for the pros, even when it's raining. So you can imagine everyone hated that job in the winter, snowing sometimes. Then someone might be on tees, change room duty. We have to clean all the change rooms afterwards at the end of the day. Once all the jobs were done at the end of the day, they come around and inspect, and then you'd say whether you could leave or not. We had to take on the way back, we had to take all the training kit to the local laundrette for it to be washed. It's all the pro stuff as well, the training stuff, all the towels. So, but like I said, it taught you a lot. It taught you discipline. It taught you know, where you are within the club and where
Character
you,
building.
yeah, and where you're striving to get to, you know. I think I had two pros' boots I had to clean. One of those was Marcus Stewart, played for Huddersfield and went on to the Premier League, had a very successful career. Really nice guy. You know, he used to sort you out at the around Christmas time.
Yeah, they get a few quid at Christmas. Nice.
Yeah, it was great. Make sure his boots were like nice. But it was a great experience, you know. Taught, like I said, taught you a lot, very a lot of discipline and character building. And we trained every day like the pros.
And so
So
did you go from there into did you make some appearances for the first team then?
When I had my manager, the head manager was a guy called John Ward. I think he was at Wolverhampton prior to that. Really amazing guy. The way he set up the culture within the club, it was a very family intoriated, close to the first team. You know, it was an amazing atmosphere. And you know, at the time, you know, he'd come and watch some youth team games, get to know the players and stuff. And I really appreciate that because, you know, not every first team manager does that. Anyway, yeah, so I got, it's probably near the midway through my first year YT. I went on a good roll, a good patch, and got noticed. They first then invited me to play in the reserve team. Now the reserve team league was a league that had like teams like Tottenham, Arsenal, all the local ones, Chelsea. So I had some Premier League
Older,
clubs, West Ham, Millwall, Swindon Town. So I
all
had,
clubs around London.
as well as some clubs around like Bristol City, obviously local derby. But then it was a reserve team league, so it was sort of serious, but not. Even in the first team, players where they'd be able to come in and get fit, you know. So when we go up, we'd go and play at all these amazing stadiums. Highbury, got to play there, White Hart Lane, you know, and play against some top players coming back from injury. John Hartson was one at Arsenal, monster of a man.
I'm sure he was a handful.
Yeah, he was a handful, and I remember him chasing me, shouting at me. You know, I can't repeat on the podcast what he was shouting at me. But
I can imagine.
it scared me a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, panic,
So
mate.
yeah, so that was my first taste of, wow, you know, this is fast. This is pretty amazing. And then I got on a run, and then you know, there was only two of us that were given the opportunity. You know, And so yeah, my confidence was flying. And then, you know, done my second year, same thing. You know, I didn't really break into the first team, and it was very rare for any YT to break into the first team. And then yeah, coming to the end of my 2 years, and it was one of the most nerve-wracking experiences, because you're living it, you know, you're day in, day out. It all comes down to this one day, and everyone's nervous. They're sat outside, they're calling one person in at a time. You've got the first team manager, the reserve team manager, youth team manager, youth development officer. They're all in there in this big table, and you're just like, oh my God. I'm in there and I'm watching players come out in tears, you know. I didn't get it, didn't get it. And I'm like, oh my God. So
It's
they finally
such,
call me in. Yeah, they
yeah.
call me in. I go in there. Everyone's looking at me. I'm nervous. I sat down and I was just like, oh my God. You've got John Ward there, you know, the assistant coach, he's everyone. And he just sort of said, look, don't look so nervous. Relax. And I was like, okay. And then he says, look, we've been really impressed with you. We think you've, you know, where you've come on, you've been fantastic, you know, this, that, and the other. You've got a great attitude. We see you out there doing extra, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we give you the opportunity to, so we're going to offer you a year's pro. So he says, but be mindful, you're the only one in your year. So I was pretty lucky out of about 12, 13 of us. He says, so when you go back, just be mindful, you know, when you go outside, that, you know, that other people didn't get it. And I was like, okay. But yes, so then I signed there and then, which was
Oh,
amazing.
mate, I'm sure that was just, yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, and it was a no mobile phones then, so I had to run all the way up to the clubhouse, put my money in, phone my mum and dad. I made it. So
Amazing
yeah,
memories, I'm sure, mate.
so it was a pretty amazing experience. Like I said, I learned a lot from it. I mean, yes, it was only Div 2 at a time, but hard, very difficult, you know, a lot of discipline, a lot of sacrifice from the family as well, running me and driving 3 hours to watch me every time, you know. But very grateful, you know.
And how did your year pro go, mate? That's, I mean, that's incredible. You got
This is
that
where it gets a bit
in the
tricky for
year.
me, and this is one that people will under, you know, that probably it's not all rainbows and butterflies, you know. It's so I got told at the end of the season, and then within the break, I think it was a month and a half break, we get off to relax, go back to our families in the summer. I heard on the news that John Ward had been fired, sacked, and that Ian Holloway, you guys know Ian Holloway, he was coming in to take over the role as head coach. And immediately I was like, all that hard work, you know, you now have to impress a whole new coaching team and manager, and who might have a different dynamic way of thinking. So, and as a young pro, I was probably, how old was I? I was 16, 17, 18. I was probably about 19 years of age, 20. It was tough, you know. So he came in, it felt completely different. I think it was his first managerial role. So, you know, for Ollie, it was a tough role to take on. You know, finding his feet. He brought a lot of QPR guys over, and as well, whole new coaching staff. So the dynamic was different, you know. And again, another psychological battle for a young pro to try and overcome. And I've gone from being the man to who's this guy, you know. So I had to start from scratch. So yeah, done my year. It was completely different, you know. I don't want to, you know, obviously talk too bad, but like I said, Ollie was, it was his first role as a manager, so I think he was learning the ropes because he was a player manager. So I think it was difficult for him to distinguish the playing side and then the management side. And again, you know, you live and you learn, and you learn by your mistakes, and you move on, what worked, what didn't work. I didn't really get too many opportunities. The young pros didn't.
I suppose it's difficult for a manager coming in that wants to have a career in the game like that. It's tough to trust youth players, when you've got tried and tested ones available,
Exactly. Whereas John Ward, he was tried and tested, and he had a he had a system, and he was always bringing youngsters through, you know, top youngsters. I mean, Marcus Stewart, for one, he was a young Bristolian boy, went through the academy and went on to do good things, you know, for the club and further. But yeah, so again, you know, at the time you're bitter because you don't really understand. You just think, you know, this guy, you know, but then as you get older, you start to understand, hey, you know, he's human. He has different, you know, viewpoints. Like you said, you've got to come in, you've got to hit the ground running. Otherwise your job's on the line, cutthroat business. So anyway, long story short, as I was coming to, I was probably about 4 months left on my contract. They called me in, Ollie and the chairman, and just said, look, you obviously, you want to be playing first team. We get that. You know, you're playing in reserves every week, but how about going on loan to Bath City, who was a semi-pro team in the Vauxhall Conference then. It was one below the Pro League. Very renowned for being very, very, how to say, very physical, tough, and a strong division. And I just wanted to play, Greg. So I just said, yes,
yeah,
I'll do it. So I went on loan to them, played in the conference, taught me a lot as well. And then our first team captain, Andy Tilson, unbelievable, ex-QPR as well. What a lovely guy. He was a complete role model for us pros. Didn't have to do this, but, you know, when there was a team, Farnborough Town, which is near, I suppose, Basingstoke, where I grew up, he knew the manager by chance, a guy called Alan Taylor. And he put a word in and said, look, when you guys play this time, do you mind having a little look? And then, you know, he's coming out of contract. You know, good player, good lad. It'd be great for him to carry on in the game closer to where he's, you know, he lives.
Where he's from, yep.
And he even come out to watch that day, you know. So that's how good a person. First team captain, come out to watch as well. And luckily, I had a good game, and so that was
you got
it.
In there.
I signed for Farnborough Town in the conference as a young. I think I was must have been about 19, 20. Again, very difficult. Some of the grounds we went to were huge. Had a lot of followers and fans. So it's my first taste of, wow, you know, this
people are watching you. Yeah.
Yeah, but
was there a lot of difference? Like, I'm sure. I mean, of course, there's the obvious differences of, you know, the physicality. Did you find it was the speed of play a lot higher when you were playing for Bristol compared to when you went to the conference?
Yeah, I'd say it was. I'd say when I was at Bristol playing in those games, it was a little bit more technical. Still hard paced, but more technical, less mistakes, any little mistake and, you know, you're going to get punished. Whereas in the conference, I think it was a little bit more, which got better over time, but it was at the time is a little bit more, you know, you have to be on your solid as an athlete.
Yeah.
You know, you have to really battle for it. But there was some teams we played who had both, you know, that some of the top teams, I was like, wow, this is, and some of those clubs at the time were professional. They trained every day. So
100%, you know, yeah.
Rushton and Diamonds, teams
it's
like
difficult
that.
Too when you are a technical player and maybe you're small. You know, I'm obviously small too. To when you're at, you know, conference games and it is a physical and maybe it's a there's a lot more heading involved and tackles involved. Almost you feel like you're a better player when you're playing at the higher level because you maybe get a little bit more time on the ball. It's a bit more technical. I know exactly what you mean, mate. And so where did you go from after you did you play some seasons within the conference then?
Yeah. I played a couple of seasons in Farnborough Town in a conference. Then same thing happened. We heard that a new manager coming in. So I had a decision to make. So I was, you know, there was a local team at the time, Aldershot Town. They were playing probably, they used to play in the Pro League, obviously, but then there had a lot of issues within the club and they had to drop down and make their way back up. But they were probably one below. They were playing like Ryman Premier, I think it was, which is still a high level at the time.
Yeah.
But, so my decision was with my family, do I stay here you know, and but the same thing happened as what happened at Bristol. Do I know Aldershot Town are interested. Do I make the move? You know, yes, yep. It's a division down, but it's still not a bad standard. And they get 2,000-3,000 people come watch them still at that level. So I decided to make a move. I think they bought me from Farnborough Town for a small fee, which was a bit weird. Then I moved to Aldershot Town. Didn't really get on with the coaching staff. I don't want to obviously talk bad of him, but he wasn't really my cup of tea. Played there and then had a bit of a falling out. Didn't really get on with the manager. So then wanted to get back into loving the game again because I lost the love of it, you know?
Yeah.
Because I wasn't fit. I wasn't playing much. And, you know, I was going through a little bit of the side that a lot of people don't see, you know, the ugly side where clubs and can mess players around a little bit.
Yeah.
So my buddy was like, Stu, come and play for us. I think it was Staines Town. They may have been playing in the same division. Just to enjoy it. So
to get the love back for it again and get there.
Yeah. Cause I went through a tough time there. I was still very young, you know, frustrated. All I wanted to do was play. So I joined ex Farnborough player at Staines Town, started to build the love for the game again. And I sort of stayed Ryman Premier, which is a decent level for semi-pro and ended up playing for the Metropolitan Police, various different clubs. I met some amazing people. I was probably playing there for 12 years, different clubs in at that level, which I got a lot out of as well.
Yeah.
A lot of learning, a lot of great people I met along the way. Amazing experience.
And so I'm sure that grounding in the game with pro and even playing in the conference, and you've seen the professional side of things, you've seen the semi-pro side of things. Yep. I'm sure that was a great grounding for you to eventually get into coaching. At what stage did you get into your coaching? Did you do any coaching in England, Stuart?
Yeah, so I was probably around 34 when I stopped playing. I had a job as well, and it was just getting. I was working in the city of London at the time for a finance bank, Citigroup. So getting up early, taking all my soccer stuff, getting a train into London, leaving early, getting a train to where we were playing. And then waking up. Aching, getting home late, waking up aching, walking to the, and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. This is getting hard. So I decided to obviously retire. And then it was that point where I realized how much I loved the game, you know, because it was this void. I'd done it for such a long period of time. So I was looking at ways to get back into the game. I had a few friends out in the US at the time. And one in Colorado, Denver, very close friend of mine. I've known him since I was a toddler, young. And then another one was in New York. So I reached out to him, said he knew someone at UK Elite.
Yep.
Where obviously I met you. So I did my basic, I think it was FA level 2, to get my foot in the door. Sent my CV over to I think then was Craig Barkley.
Yep.
He had a word with the guys at UK Elite, and I had a Zoom meeting, and then he managed to get me out to New York, and then obviously that's when I met you. But with regards to a little bit of coaching in England, whilst I was doing my FA level 2, I had friends that were managers at Slough Town. So semi-pro, so I'd go over and take a couple of sessions at a time.
Would that be with adults, Stuart?
Yeah, that was with adults. Then I would also had Alan Dunn, ex Millwall. He ran a soccer academy, young soccer academy. So I helped with them, and then also a little team in Bromley. And this is obviously again for the viewers. Listening, just because you played doesn't mean you can coach. And I learned that out the very first session that I took. It was a 10-year-old boys team. I planned my session, you know, I was diligent on that. Got out there, pulled my cones out. My friend was there, you know, who was actually an FA instructor at the time as well, you know, and called them all in. And at that moment, I knew, wow, this is going to be a lot difficult than I thought. I had one kid chasing flies, one kid eating grass, you know, and I'm trying to get my coaching points across. I'm losing their, you know, attention. And I was just like, oh my goodness. It was carnage, you know. Yeah. So, you know, when people think, you know, how easy is, it's not easy. You know, you have to figure out how to get in, get your point across, get out, what to say, what not to say, keep them engaged, you know. So that was my first
experience. That's still a good grounded, isn't it, Stuart? I mean, you've coached you've coached adults, you've coached you've got your playing experience, you've had experiences with all levels of the game, it sounds like, with the grassroots as well, and so you land in New York, mate, in 2015. I've talked to a few guests on here that, you know, we talk about our UK Elite days or when we first got here. For me, like I was the same. I'd done a little bit of coaching back home, in schools, in local clubs, but like just the amount of hours that you get on the field and being able to coach at multiple age groups and you know, different families, different cultures. I think for a young coach to come over for a summer or for a extended stay visa, it's just such a great grounding in the game. That year, I feel like just took us all, or if any newcomer, it just takes you to a new level of coaching, I feel like.
Amazing. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so when you arrived at UK Elite, what was your experience like at UK Elite? What clubs were you in and what sort of coaching were you doing?
Yeah. So like you said, for me, it was a great experience. It was for being a new coach, you know, because I still didn't really know too much. Although I was, you know, done the basics and coached a little bit in the UK. For what I was about to go in, I was told by Craig Barkley at the time, you know, you're going to be coaching three teams. I think two of those were girls and one was boys. And I was like, well, girls teams, I've never coached girls before, you know. How are they going to be? Is this going to be difficult? Is it, you know? And I've never actually coached a team as we know it out here. So it was a lot to take on. But UK Elite for me, they set you up very well.
Yeah.
Lots of very good staff training days, good people.
I think that was one of the big things for me too, mate. You're right. It's like when we first got there, meeting Tim Bradbury and the other guys that were there, it was just getting, and you know, the weekly staff training at Bridgeport, where we'd all you'd complain at the time, but now, I mean, I would pay to go and do something like that now, to go and get that staff training and be around other coaches and get session ideas and be in that environment again. It was great. And obviously we all had a good camaraderie, all the coaches, because, you know, you got like ex-players like yourself, you know, people like me that thought they could play. And then, you know, it was a good little session that they would get, that we would get involved in. But I think that's the same too. Coming out when you're, you know, back, it's just a different culture. Where back home, you know, you would maybe be an assistant coach or you would be a coach of one team, but over here, you step into, okay, now you've got three teams you're managing. You might have. I know whenever I first came out, one of my first ever sessions was with pre-K or kindergarten kids, and you know. For me, I was like, I don't know if I'd signed up for this, but then you get into it and you see other coaches do it, and you just, it's fun. But I feel like if you can control a group of 4-year-olds and 3-year-olds, you go to another session with it's 14-year-old boys or girls, and it's just easy to manage 100%. Them, you know.
100%. And like you just said, like if you have to go through that to them, it molds you and creates the coach that you are. You learn little tricks, how to gain kids, you know, attention. Even at that age, you know, what works, what doesn't work, you know, and there's going to be a lot of failure, because that's the only way you learn and right. Okay, well, that worked for me. it might not work for you, you know,
but it
works for me. And then I'll take steal that part. And before you know it, you've got your tools. And, but yeah, I suppose, you know, coaching at that, the amount of hours that you get out here as opposed to what you get in the UK is like gold dust, you know,
isn't it? Yeah.
You're on the field a hell of a lot, you know, coaching those three teams. And even on game days, you know, you're learning a lot about yourself, you know, being mindful of the kids, you know, at first you're like, we all have that competitiveness within us, but you have to rein that in, control yourself, and, you know, try and guide the kids as much as possible, you know.
100%. And so within that year, I know you went to, were you over in Seattle with at that year?
Yeah, that was an amazing experience as well. You know, being able to get out across over to the West Coast for a month, summer camps, you know, and some were good, some not so good. I think I had a residential where I stayed at Washington University, which is an amazing experience.
It was a great experience. So you finished in with UK Elite then at the end of that year, or maybe you went back the second year. How did you end up in California?
It was a weird one, actually. So I think I was at home, obviously, and me being a little bit older, I think when I moved over to the US, I must have been about when I first started going over to New York, UK Elite, I was must have been about 37, 38 years old.
Right.
So for me, the short-term visas, you know, the seasonal visas, was getting a bit tiring. It was, you know, so it's okay if you're younger, you know, but for me being an older guy, I need something more, a little bit more permanent. And it just happened that I was scanning on, you know, looking through social media, Facebook, and I saw one of the old coaches that I'd worked with for a brief period out in New York, and he posted something like, just managed to steal a job coaching in California for 5 years. I've got a 5 year visa, 5 year contract, which was unheard of. So I inquired to him. He then gave me the details of the contacts out here, the 24/7 UK Soccer Academy, and emailed him my resume, and then they reached out straight away. I had a Zoom with one of the managing directors, and he offered me the role.
Right, mate. Yeah. So if you wouldn't mind, would you give us just a wee brief breakdown of your 5 years in California? Have you always been with the same company? Have you been with the same clubs?
Yeah. So when I first came out, the first assignment was a technical director, where I'd oversee a specific age group. I think it may have been U8 development to start with. So we're highlighting potential kids from maybe rec, youngsters to potentially go into comp. So I would then, you know, build the recognize first, reach out to the parents, say, hey, you know, he's this guy's very good. Mm-hmm. Has potential. Would you like him to come into a pre-academy as well, as you know, a couple of times a week, and then we can set up some little games as well with local clubs. Grew that, obviously went through the fundamentals with those, and then obviously that then they're primed for when they go in, if they want to go into comp.
Yep.
So I run that little program, and then coached three of my teams as well as, so it was quite a bit to do. Obviously for coaching three teams, you know, the admin side of it, they're dealing with the parents, you know, tryouts, etc., as well as the seasons. So we did that for a small period of time. Then me and one of the other technical directors at the time, we got offered the role of splitting a director of coaching role. So I took on the girls' side of the program, and he took on the boys. Again, big role, you know, which was a great experience. You know, it was hard being a director of coaching. You know, you consistently communicating to parents, the members, the players, setting up the schedule for practices, dealing with our coaches, hiring, So it was a
did
lot.
That club, Stuart, did that club have a set philosophy themselves that you would go in and implement, or did you guys come up with the philosophy or the playing style for the club? What would that look like?
Yeah, so the company we work for, 24/7 UK Soccer Academy, we're in a few different clubs around the area, the Bay Area. So our philosophy is pretty much the same throughout. Yes, there's a couple of little things that we could do, tweaking here and there, but the main philosophy is pretty much the same. So playing style, you know, possession based. So the kids learn how to build out, you know, play through the thirds, attractive soccer, as opposed to the root one that we all see a lot of. You know, that's the coaches that want to win now, when really we're looking to develop. So, but obviously, to not overplay though, you know, we are looking to play forwards. So when to play forwards, do it. So if a forward pass is on, there's nothing wrong with that. But look to play, you know, as quickly as possible. So we tried to implement that. Obviously, that's at a high level saying, but obviously there's a lot behind that with regards to structuring the curriculum, to try and bring out that playing style from a young age as they go through the age groups. So we obviously have to a degree stay in line with what the other clubs are doing. But we did get a little bit of playroom being the directors to change certain parts as well, which was good.
And what would your if you were to give us a brief would your playing philosophy, is there anything that you like to implement yourself personally? What's your own coaching philosophy?
So for me, again, you know, it's always difficult as a coach because you obviously have the pressure of the parents.
Right.
So, you know, when we say, oh, we want our kids to build out, sometimes, or most of the times, when you're first implementing that for maybe a new team, it doesn't happen overnight. Yeah. So you're going to have failures. You know, there's going to be times where your kids play into, or they lose the ball straight away, they get scored on, you know. You may get thumped 3-0, you might get thumped 4-0. But, you know, you have to be strong as a coach to stick to the, you know, go through it, continuously communicate with the parents. Hey, this is fine. This is normal. You know, stick with it. And eventually, you know, you break through the zones and then you start to reap the rewards. You see a nice little style of playing. For me, like I say, I like my players to play out, use the goalkeeper as much as possible at feet. I always tell my players that, you know, if you can play forwards, that's the best pass to play. If you can't, obviously retain possession, that might mean we go sideways or backwards, but ultimately we want to go forwards. And then obviously the formations come as you go through the age group, 7v7, 9v9, 11v11. And we try and structure the formation so that it's easy, so it flows through the age groups.
Yep.
You know, so eventually, I mean, a lot of us play a 4-3-3 now in the 11v11. So, you know, for instance, I might play a formation with my 9v9 team that might then make it easier for them when they come to, you know.
You just add a couple of players, What formation would you play at a 9v9 then for 4-3-3?
I sometimes switch up at times. I play a three at the back. But I call the two that pull wide to come up for goal kicks off the keeper. I call them the 4 and the 5, with the 6 dropping in centrally.
Yep.
I think that's the easiest way for when you go into 11-11. I mean, again, it's not the right way or necessary to other people or one way. It's the way that, you know, I would see that it's easier for me to then you just bring in the 2 and 3. So when you go into 11-11, the 4 and 5 still pull wide.
Yep.
And then you're just adding the 2 and 3.
Two and three go a bit higher. It's good. It's nice to be able to give them that grounding, you know, before they, you know, in that transition from 9v9 to 11v11, where you just add a couple of players into a bigger field. It's not a big, you know, it's not too bad. No, it's nice. It's nice to be able to have a club structure like that where you can you know, you have a set formation to get you towards your 4-3-3, and sure, I guess when you go on all these US soccer coaching courses, you know, it's always within a 4-3-3, it seems like at the minute. So have you got any have you done any more coaching education since you've been working for 24/7 soccer?
I've done a fair bit now. I think when I was with you guys, UK Elite, we did our United States Soccer Federation E license. Yeah. We've done it together, mate. Then because of that, we managed to shift to the advanced national diploma.
That's right.
We did that as well. And I think it was at the time where you might have been, if you'd done your advanced, you could then slot across to the equivalent. I think it was a B, you went United States Soccer Federation B, but they stopped doing that.
Yeah, that's right.
I've had to now work my way up from the United States soccer side. So I did my my D, I've done my C, so I'm looking to get on the B as soon as possible now. Along with some other little courses here and there, you know, continually trying to learn with keep up with the trends, you know, because as we know, soccer changes every day, trends and formations and playing style, you know, just trying to keep up to date.
100%.
So I can pass that on. But yeah, it's been a pretty amazing journey. You know, just learning. Yeah.
Did you do your whenever I was with you, Kelly? I was able to get on my UEFA B. Were you on that course?
No, I didn't. I didn't get across to do the B license. I don't know if I left or. But
yeah, maybe you weren't there at the time, mate. Yeah. So, mate, what's your you've been in California for 5 years now, mate. In Oakland, what's your coaching aspirations for the future?
Well, I'm currently the U13 technical director for the age group within our academy. So we have three clubs that we 24/7 UK Soccer Academy. Are involved in with. So we're there. The club will come to us and say, look, can you run our program? And we've been in those smaller clubs for a long period of time now. So what happened is we created an 11v11 club called Association Nice. Football Club here in Oakland. So you have Piedmont Soccer, a 7v7, 9v9. You have Montclair, 7v7, 9v9. And then we have Castro Valley. So we've been helping them for a number of years now, so we have a great collaboration with them. So by creating this 11v11 club, when these players hit the, you know, age in the U13 age group into that 11v11 format, we then pick from the three clubs and create our academy teams, and then so on and so on. So it's now actually quite a big club. We've been going for nearly 2 years now. And we're very big. Boys' side's doing very well. We're still looking to grow the girls' side a little bit more. But we have some high-level teams in both the boys and girls. But with regards to...
what level, sorry, Stuart, just in there, sorry, mate. But what level would the kids play at? Would they play close to ECNL? Would it be local high-level leagues? What would it be?
Yeah, so... MPL initially, so we play MPL, but the boys' side have done very well this past season, and we're just waiting for confirmation, but it looks like we have now ECNL as well status, maybe. We're just waiting, like I said, to hear back from confirmation. But obviously it's took time. We've got some great teams on the boys' side, very strong. But with regards to, it's a handful what I'm doing now, because I'm coaching three teams as well as a technical director, where I oversee seven teams, five boys, two girls. So I'm the direct go-to. So if there's any issues with parents, they can't resolve with their coach, they come to me, and vice versa with the coaches. Help with players as well, as much as possible. So it's a lot. If I can't resolve it, I go then to my director of coaching. Aspirations are, so obviously I want to remain in soccer. I'd love to maybe dabble in college at one point. I know it's something everyone says, but just to experience it again, you know, it's another learning, like you can probably experience to learn from. Something I love to delve into. another part of area as well, which I maybe would like to push more on, is parent education.
Yeah,
I mean, we were talking before we went live, Greg, and I think that's a huge part that we can all, you know, help with parents on, you know, because they need support as well, you know, especially the younger players, that because it's new for the parents as well.
100%. What does parent education look like at your club, or have you any ideas of how you would maybe implement it?
So it's something that we need to do more of, I think, within our organization. I think a lot of it's left to each individual coach. We'll do something here and there. We obviously, before tryouts, we do a few slides for parents to help, you know, priming them to going into the season. But for me, I think we need to do, not just us, I think in general, you know, look to educate a little bit more, provide support. I mean, we've all had those pushy parents that, you know, that want it a little bit more than their players, their kids at times. So I suppose it's just to allow
it's hard to manage, isn't it? But I feel like it's something that, you know, I'm planning on doing myself, is just to have some more regular parent meetings. I mean, it's difficult to obviously get the time, and parents are very busy as well, you know, juggling multiple sports, multiple children, their own careers. You know, it's difficult to find the time, but it's, you know, being able to explain your why, you know, I feel like limits a lot of that questions. And if you get them on board with the development style, which I'm so lucky that a lot of my parents really get it, and they know that we try to play out of the back, and they know that we maybe will try some, like I've even been trying this week, one of my teams, I tried to implement a corner kick routine. And I know when we play it in a game, it's not going to work out a couple of times, but having them on board, they try it whenever you do see them have that success, it's just such a more pleasurable experience than, yeah, just whacking it in there. You know, they will, the kids have learned, they've got technical ability to be able to set the ball at appropriate weight to get the ball in, get a good angle. You know, that's what, for me, I like to try and do that. And even just having the parent education in terms of development, but then also, you know, your why we do certain things, why we're not going to abuse referees, why we're not going to you know, be so concerned about the win, playing time, you know, just giving them some sort of a background as to why your why, I feel like helps a lot. So it's something that I really need to be better at as well. I feel like we could all probably be a bit better at it. But that's great that you're trying to implement that within your club. Have you any other ideas for how you would go about that, or do you do it on a regular basis, or would you do it at the start of the season?
Yeah, so I would do it at the start of the season. I have a team meeting, create a team pack, and go through a Zooms and presentation. I highlight player responsibilities, my responsibilities, and parent responsibilities. But also then I go into a few points for parents, and I suppose the best information and that I learned and message to the parents is, you know, even if your kid's 9 years old, 10 years old, this is his or her journey, right? So the way to look at it is, don't be more involved than your kid. So if you're the one finding yourself coming to the coach, hey, can we do this, can we do that, or you know, Billy would like to play here, would like to play there, is take a step back, take a deep breath, you know, this, let Billy find his way. Let him ask the questions. Let him take responsibility. Let him speak to the coach. You know, and then you got to. The thing I say to them is trust your kid with a coach. Trust the process. Release your kid to the game and let them fail. You know, it's okay, because a lot of people, we get it. You know, they love their kids. They don't want them to fail, etc. But they have to fail to be able to learn and progress. So the thing I say to my parents is, release them to our team, let them make their own decisions, you know, because this is probably one of the only times that they can fail, right? You go into sport, into school, you know, if you're failing your GCSEs, your things, then yes, a big deal, I get it.
Yeah.
But this is an environment where it's okay to fail, you know, so, and they will learn a hell of a lot more just by supporting them, being there, you know, mum and dad, you know, I'm here to pick up the pieces, but you go and do your thing, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to get involved with a coach. You got any questions, you speak to him. And that way, they start to really blossom, and they take responsibilities, great life lessons, you know.
Just a question for you. Sorry, I haven't even asked you this. I didn't write this in our notes beforehand. What advice would you give? So recently I've experienced it, and I've talked to a couple of other coaches that, you know, maybe where you've got a player on your roster, that they might have siblings that also play at a high level. So for instance, maybe you've got an academy level player who's a U9 or U10, and their sister or their brother play at an ECNL or ECNRL team. And the family are, they're expecting the same trajectory for the younger player into that sort of, into that environment. How would you go about managing that expectation? Just regular conversations. Have you any advice, or what would you do in that situation yourself?
So I tend to find that parents of players that have played at that high level, they tend to be a little bit more relaxed because they've done the process already. They've gone through it. They understand it a little bit more. So they're normally very supportive.
Yeah.
Obviously, the odd one where they want it so much, but I haven't really had too many experiences where they've not been able to manage those expectations for their kid to try and follow the same path. It's like because they've experienced it with the older one before, they're a little bit more understanding. They understand more and more supportive. So I'd imagine, you know, that everyone is different. You know, just because your eldest has made a very high standard doesn't mean that his younger sibling is going to follow the same trajectory, you know?
100%, yeah. Different. Every child is different. I mean, it's so funny. I coach a couple of siblings in PD1. Yep. It's so different to see the interest levels in some kids, but it also, like, obviously there's ability, styles of play are so contrasting, right? But you've even got, like, I know there's a couple of, I coach a couple of three families where I've got coach both their son and their daughter, older and younger age groups. And, you know, you have some kids where you could say, hey, would you want to come to an additional practice tonight? One of my supplemental clinics, do you want to attend? It's like, yeah, do anything to get back on the field. And then some of them are just like, no, I'm good with my normal team practices. And, you know, so it's like, you know, you got to look at the whole picture, I feel like, for that. So I've just experienced that quite recently. And I just thought it would maybe be a decent, topic for discussion, mate. But so what's the rest of 2023 look like? Or did you have any aspirations for this year? Any goals for the year, since we're right at the start of the year, mate? Have you anything?
It's got to be busy.
Yeah.
So I've got a 2008 girls academy team. They currently play at MPL. So we're looking to go play in the Phoenix Cup again this in March. Right. So that's coming up soon. I'm looking forward to that with them. I think they won it last season, playing at the level that they were playing, which is a great experience for them. I've recently took on a 2007 boys team. They play gold, so, you know, not high level, but they're great group of guys, really looking to improve and learn. Great group. They're looking to obviously knuckle down and work with those again. And I've got a little 2011 boys team that play Premier, looking to get back in them. So it's a good mix, you know, two 11v11 teams and a 9v9 team. And this is obviously their final season before they go into the youngsters, into their 11v11 format. So I'm trying to help them to make it as easy a transmission as possible, you know?
Yeah. I'm really bummed. Well, Stuart, mate, thank you so much for your time today. Mate, wish you all the best in whatever you do in California and your future over there, mate. It's been great. It's been too long since we've caught up. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast today, mate. And maybe if there's another topic in the future, maybe we could get you back on in the future again.
Yeah, sounds good. I really appreciate your time, mate. Appreciate the invite. It's great catching up. Sharing some old memories, you know.
Yep.
7 years gone, flown by, right?
Crazy. I know. It has, mate. I know. Well, mate, thanks very much, Stuart. I'll speak to you soon, mate. Bye-bye.
Good man. Take care.